All right. And we are back with another episode of the Pocket Protectors Podcast. I am your host, Jason Brown. You can find me on Twitter at BrownJason. And as always, got the whole gang here. And I feel like we're back at home base with our good friend, Eric. The background looks like something I've seen before. Eric, how's it going, man? How you doing? And are you, in fact, back at your usual recording location?
I am. I'm home. Last time I was out east. A couple times I've been out west. So I'm home, nice and relaxed, working on football.
Living the dream. That's what we like right there, working on football. Eric is a football guy. And we love
I never played the game, though.
Oh, that is true. You've never put your hand in the dirt. You're just a nerd. But, you know, we like you anyway. And you're a doctor, which just, you know, makes everything that you say just sound that much more important. Luke is not a doctor, but he's still really, really awesome. And his takes are also quite important. I mean, I'm sure you've played something at some point, Luke.
I played a little basketball when I was a kid.
There we go.
The fastest kid on the court, but I couldn't make it.
There you go. You played some basketball, which means you should probably play tight end. I've heard that works very well. How are things going, Luke? How you doing?
Doing all right. Ready to talk some value.
All right. Well, yeah, we are going to talk about the thing that we were talking about on the timeline the other day and then inspired you to write an article about it. And then Eric talked about the same thing on his other podcast, which is an awesome podcast. It's the PFF Forecast. You should definitely check out that podcast. If you are listening to this one, you will also enjoy that one. It's great. But I want to talk about some draft trading and pick values and how we can evaluate who wins or loses. What's the best way to go about things when you're attacking the draft? And what kind of sparked this conversation is that, you know, I often, you know, we'll post on the timeline, you know, hashtag team trade back, because I feel like the best way to win in the draft over the long term is to trade back, acquire kind of more picks. Take a humble approach to drafting, because I don't think any team is actually that good at the draft. But this sparked a conversation where folks were coming in with different points of view. And one of the things that our man Flip brought in is that, you know, Rick Spielman, Vikings general manager, one of the things that has kind of been built into the lore around Rick is that he built this team rather quickly by aggressively, you know, trading into the first, and the core of the team was kind of built around, you know, those trade ups. And so one of the things Flip was saying is maybe it does make more sense to trade up, get players that you think are better than consensus and are falling to you, and trading up and catching those players to build your roster that way. So with Luke having written about it so recently, Eric having spoken about it on a couple of occasions now over the last month or so, figured this would be a good thing for us to talk about here. So with all of that said, Luke, I guess kick us off. You just wrote the article. Let the people know where they can find it, what you were writing about, and then the general gist of it, and we can jump into the conversation there.
Yeah, so you can find it at Purple PTSD, where you can find all of my content. So I basically just wanted to write about, like, some of the tendencies that I think are good, and, like, if I were a GM that I would employ. And one of them was kind of in the vein of trading back, is that in the late rounds, if you look at, like, the late rounds value-wise from about, like, the middle of the fifth or even the top of the fifth all the way to the end of the draft, like, all of those picks have super, super similar values and super, super similar, like, hit rates, if I guess if you want to call it that way. It's, you know, it's kind of, like, a fifth is, I guess, better than a seventh, but both of them are just very hard to, like, get a good player. So the idea is to split all of those late round picks up into, like, as many as possible. Like, I would take 4 7th rounders over 1 5th rounder, because I think, like, fifths and sevenths are close enough where quantity is better than quality. And then I also wrote about when to trade up. And I think it's like, if you see a player falling that you think is, you know, way higher than the point at the draft you're actually in. So, like, for example, trading up for Dalvin Cook. You know, if the team had them, like, 15th on their board or whatever, which is kind of where everybody had Dalvin Cook last year, and he's falling to 41, the Vikings traded from 48 to 41 to get there. They probably overpaid to move 7 spots in the second round. Like, moving up 7 spots in the second round probably costs less than what they paid. But because they got, you know, the 15th best player, quote unquote, you can kind of say that, well, they traded up from 48 to pick 15 to get the 15th best player. And if you look at things that way, you get a much more interesting picture, and I would say a much clearer picture of like the trades in the draft. And then on the flip side, if you find people who have crushes and you think they're wrong about it, or just people who have crushes and you want to take advantage of it, you can get them to overpay you to come up and get their guy. Like, for example, last year the Vikings traded down with the Chiefs, and the Chiefs went up to pick 86 to pick Kareem Hunt, who the Vikings definitely didn't need anymore because they had Dalvin. And they were able to, you know, get a nice price for that. Or like when the Dolphins fell in love with Leonte Carew for some reason, and you got two mid-round picks so that the Dolphins could go pick Leonte Carew. That is the kind of thing that you can like exploit to like create an advantage.
Luke, I agree with everything that you're saying. However, there will be no Leonte Carew slander on this podcast. So with that out of the way. So, Eric, I guess, you know, with Luke kind of setting the stage there, I guess, what are your thoughts on that? And then I guess, can you help us understand some of the work there that, you know, you have done? Because I know that you referenced, you know, some things, I guess, in talking about drafts and trades, you know, recently on the podcast and the forecast there. So I'm interested in getting your take on kind of how you view these things and how you test them.
Yeah. So, I mean, before kind of taking the simulation approach, I actually thought about this in a very similar way to what Luke was talking about. I think last year, right after the Vikings traded for Dalvin Cook, I was on the I believe it was the Purple podcast on 1500. And I was talking to Matthew about how, you know, if the Vikings moved up for the 41st best player in the draft, it was a sucker play. But if they moved up for the 9th best player, which was how we had Dalvin Cook in our draft board, it was a, you know, positive thing. And yet every time I kind of did something like that, I always felt a little bit, not silly, but I always felt a little bit like I was leaving out a decent amount of the story, just talking about like the average expected value of those picks, right? Because in some sense, like, and this is like how you know somebody kind of like doesn't understand the process, but like, you know, the people that you know, Peter King wrote the article that said, you know, we've seen teams trade up and do well. We've seen teams trade down, or, you know, trade up and not do well. So it's basically a 50-50 proposition. And, you know, so, you know, neither team lost a trade. And it's like, well, that's not how it works, right? And I think it's just sort of a fundamental misunderstanding of probability. So that's kind of like why I wanted to simulate everything, was just to say, okay, we know that there are going to be universes where the Jets moving up to 3, using like 4 second round picks to do so or whatever, are going to win the trade, right? There's obviously going to be universes where the Colts draft 4 players that can't play and the Jets draft the next Andrew Luck, right? And so essentially what I did is I took data from Pro Football Reference, and I looked at their approximate value. And the reason I did that is because I could go back further into history. And then I essentially added a little bit of noise from like saying, okay, if it's the 3rd pick, I'm, you know, not every year is the 3rd pick the 3rd best player. So I actually, or not every year is he, you know, as good as that draft position. So I basically said, okay, let's take all picks between 1 and 5. Or for like the 27th pick, let's take all picks between 25 and 29. And basically what you do is you just randomly sample that about, you know, 50,000 times or however long it takes to sort of get a distribution. And then you look at the distribution and ask, okay, how many, you know, simulations do the Jets get more value than the Colts, for example, in the trade that we were talking about on the PFF forecast? Or recently we did one on the Patriots. They have 4 picks in the first 2 rounds and the Jets now have that, just that one. How often do the Jets get more value than the Patriots in that realm? And I think that what the simulation does is it allows, you know, the Jets fans on Twitter to see the fact that they might win the trade every once in a while, but it also allows us to sort of reduce down to the analysis that, you know, I had previously been doing, and then Luke also as well, is like, on average, this is a bad trade, you know, that kind of thing. So I think it's a pretty cool thing to look at, and I think, you know, historically, we've been pretty wrong about the value of draft picks, which is interesting.
And so a couple of things there, I guess, you know, we'll come back to historically being wrong about like the value of the draft picks there. But when you mentioned that you are kind of you're running the simulation. I guess what does that actually mean? Like, how are you simulating these different scenarios and how they play out? And I guess how do you set the parameters or whatever it is that you need to do for, you know, the scenario in which, you know, the Jets draft Andrew Luck, but all, then, you know, on the other side of it, the Colts draft the players that the Browns did in the Julio Jones trade. Like, how, I guess, how do you set it up to make it
Right.
run all those different random kind of iterations to make it, you know, a valid distribution for yourself in the end?
Right. So you basically just say, okay, this is universe one, and I'm going to go back into the history of Pro Football Reference data, which you can scrape off the internet, and just say, randomly select me one of the picks between one and five over the last set from 1994 until today. Okay, boom. We randomly select Dante Fowler. You know what I'm saying? And then we look at how much approximate value he's added to his team during his career. Actually, it wouldn't be Fowler because he hasn't played long enough. But like, take another, you know, third overall pick and project his value onto that team. And then, you know, so and then, okay, let's get all the way down to the Jets pick or the Jets, you know, natural pick. Let's randomly select, you know, a player in that distribution of picks. Okay, let's go back to their other pick. Let's randomly select a player there. And then, you know, you add the value on one side, you add the value on the other, you take the difference. And then you do that about 50,000 times. And then essentially you have this distribution of differences in value. And then, you know, you draw a graph or you just like look at the distribution, look at the average or something like that. Or you ask how many of these simulations did the Colts win? How many simulations did the Jets win? That kind of thing. So that's basically the mechanics. It's not terribly, you know, it's not terribly difficult to do, and you're not, and there's some assumptions you're making of independence of picks and everything, but over the big, you know, over the long haul, it ends up being a, you know, I think a pretty sound methodology.
That's awesome. And one of the things, and I feel like this might derail us a little bit, but you mentioned it and it sparked a question. So I feel like I need to ask is that, you know, you're mentioning there in terms of and Luke kind of hinted at it as well, is maybe us being wrong about the value of picks in general, or maybe overvaluing, you know, kind of the earlier picks versus the later picks based on what they actually give you. I guess can you dig into that for me a little bit and kind of help me understand what you mean when you're saying that?
Yeah,
Yeah,
so go
go
ahead.
ahead. Okay, I'll take it. Yeah, I want to talk about the trade charts too, because that's something that like people will often use, and like every fan blog is gonna have like, here's the trade chart and where our picks are. And usually they're using the worst one, which is the Jimmy Johnson one. And what's weird about that one is that it tends to reflect what teams actually do. Like if you look at a lot of trades, they tend to make sense on that chart. So either teams are just directly using it or they're using the philosophies from it. But that chart and the values on it were pretty much arbitrarily created one day. It's like he wrote it on the back of a napkin.
It was actually given to Jimmy Johnson and the Dallas Cowboys by their finance department because apparently back then it was actually how much you had to sign each of those picks for on
Oh my
average.
God, I did not know that.
And I just learned that actually recently from somebody who was in the NFL, you know, for, you know, an entire career. And it was really interesting because I thought it was derived by Jimmy Johnson. In sort of a haphazard way, based upon the fact that they hit on all their high picks in the Herschel Walker trade, and they were just
Yeah.
kind of resulting a little bit. But actually, it was about like, what are these things going to cost the owners? So it's really
That's
interesting.
interesting. But you know, it either way, it's like not very reflective of
Right.
how good players end up being. Like the third overall pick in on this trade chart is three times as valuable as like the 26th overall pick. And while the hit rate might be different, and of course, you know, the third pick is better than the 26th pick, like it's hard to get a player that's like three times as valuable as another first round player. And I have a hard time believing that the hit rate is like three times as big, only, you know, 23 picks away.
Their
And
distributions overlap. Let's put it that way.
yeah,
Yes.
they're not that far apart. And so Harvard in I think 2011, there was a Harvard study that tried to do this a little better using approximate value, the Pro Football Reference metric, which is basically just like giving a team 100 or so points of credit to distribute between its players, depending on how good the team was. And the more points you get, the better you are as a player. So they did that, and then Chase Stewart about a year later like cleaned it up a little bit and did some other things and capped off the production at 5 years after the player was drafted, because most GMs aren't planning that far ahead, and like did some other smart stuff. And they came up with distributions that were like way flatter. So, you know, related to a fourth round pick, a first round pick is like way closer. And that I think is the methodology that we should be looking at. And the way that that plays out is that if everybody's making trades based on the Jimmy Johnson chart, but reality plays out based on the Chase Stewart and the Harvard charts, that basically means that trading down wins like almost every time, because teams just overvalue draft position. They just think it is more valuable than it is to move up in the draft, which is kind of at the root of all the philosophies I talked about in the article, of like trading back is going to be more valuable. Like you said, like unless you're, you know, moving up to get the ninth best player in the draft or something like that. And it just informs that dynamic. But I think that's why team trade back, like that's at the crux of hashtag team trade back, is that teams just overvalue moving up.
Yeah, that paper by Cade Massey and of Massey Peabody and Richard Thaler, who just won a Nobel Prize in economics, is a really cool read. And I think it's a little dated in the sense that I think it was written before the new CBA, but essentially their conclusion was actually the most valuable pick in the draft is the first pick of the second round, because first round picks were being paid so much more back then. But yeah, their conclusion was pretty cool. It's so much more flat. And I do think it's because I think we really do underestimate, and this could be, you know, I think Pro Football Focus has something to offer here too and everything, but like we just underestimate the amount of noise inherent in drafting somebody really high. And so like, you know, and for a long time, we couldn't evaluate certain positions quite as well, like offensive line. And so, you know, if the Raiders drafted Robert Gallery at two, you know, who's to tell whether he stinks or not, you know what I'm saying? So, you know, there's that. But I think one thing that's really interesting, and I've learned this sort of through talking to people, and I think it's, and also sort of like makes intuitive sense, is that teams often get poor deals trading up simply because they aren't holding the right change. Okay, so if you're like, let's say that you're, you know, you want a player, and the pick 15 is coming up, and on the draft chart, you know, it says that you should only give up like the 30th pick and the 40th pick, but you're carrying pick 27 and pick 38. Well, you're probably not going to be able to go deeper into your draft to give up those picks because they're worth less, and so you don't have, you know, pick 30 and pick 40 or something like that. So you only have the change that you have in your hand. So I do think that that works to the disadvantage of teams that try to trade up as well. So they sort of get double, you know, sort of screwed over in that event as well.
It kind of makes me think about like when Rick Spielman would trade down and then trade back up. And he did that a couple high profile times, like with Harrison Smith and stuff. But he does it in the mid round sometimes too. And maybe that, like, if you were really trying to, okay, I really need the 30th and 40th to make this a good deal, I'm going to trade down to get those to, like, save myself a little bit. Like, I wonder if there's any merit to that or if that's even, like, a possible thing to pursue or think about.
Yeah, in the book by Michael Holley about the, which you should read or listen to on tape, all of his books about the Patriots, but essentially that's how the Patriots think, right? They're, you know, they're thinking about buying picks so that they can buy other picks to buy other picks. Like, and I think that one of the things that I think is more true about the draft than we think is that teams are trying to trade down more, and I think some teams are just smarter and don't. But you know, there's always calls like, you know, trying to basically sell their top pick for more picks, and you know, I think especially in a draft like we're going to see in 2018 here. When the draft is sort of weak on, you know, really good players, like Steve Palazzolo was saying, like he doesn't necessarily see three rounds of third round or better talent players. We might see a lot of teams trying to trade back and sell those picks because they're simply not, you know, players worth them in this draft.
Yeah. And Eric, and there was a point that, that George made on the last episode of the Forecast where he was talking about, kind of the evaluation of trades and the things that we do as fans, generally speaking, that doesn't overlay kind of the probability of those picks actually hitting or missing on there. Like, there's always that when people evaluate the trades, it seems as though there's an assumption that, well, the picks are just going to hit, I guess. Could you kind of give us a little bit in terms of kind of what, where he was going with that thought? Because it's something you guys touched on really quick as you were going through, but it really stuck in my mind is that, you know, those picks are only going to hit, you know, X percentage of the time. And we often don't include that in our analysis when we're really looking at these trades and evaluating, you know, who won.
Right. I mean, that's what the simulation's for. I mean, it's, there's a significant amount of time that when, you know, so who was it? Cleveland is going to move up from 3-4 to 3 with the Vikings in 2012 and take Trent Richardson. There's a lot of situations where that pick is just a complete bust, you know, and like, we don't necessarily, like, we're like, oh man, the Vikings got Trent Rich, the Vikings got Matt Khalil and like three other picks, and the Cleveland Browns got Trent Richardson. Like, maybe we should say something like, well, and you know, the Browns got Trent Richardson, and 50% of the time Trent Richardson's going to be a decent running back in this league. You know what I'm saying? Like, we don't say that kind of stuff. We assume that this player is sort of like a, as you said, a player that's going to work out, and that's not always the case. I do think that's what the simulation allows for. It allows to sort of see, like, oh my goodness, there's a lot of universes where this trade ends up badly for us. And you know, I think especially for a team like the Jets, if this pick doesn't hit, they're basically going to be the worst team in the NFL for quite some time because they don't have a great roster on top of it. Whereas if you looked at, you know, one of the trades they talked about in the Michael Hawley book about the Patriots was when the former Patriot Thomas Dimitroff moved up with the Browns to draft Julio Jones. You know, even though Atlanta sort of suffered for a few years with, you know, mediocre play, you know, they were somewhat competitive still because they had a decent team behind, you know, the players that they weren't going to get with the picks they gave to the Browns. So you do have to, like, you know, put that in perspective as well. I do think that that's what makes for, you know, sort of an interesting time.
All right. So with all that said, you know, and I think that generally speaking here, we are, you know, team trade back on this podcast here, I guess. Like, how do you balance that out? And I guess for you, Eric, you know, like when the Vikings traded up to get Dalvin, I know for me, I'm a Florida State fan, love Dalvin Cook, the player, but I had a moment there where I was upset that we traded up because it felt like the wrong thing to do. And I guess from your perspective, like, how do you balance those competing things if you were to go into, you know, into the war room where, okay, this player that we think is here is falling versus the likelihood that, you know, it's probably still the better play for us over the long term to trade back and amass value. Like, how do you balance those competing priorities from an analytical perspective as you make decisions?
I mean, I think you have to, and this is kind of like when you're doing anything, like, you know, you go to a casino and you have some fun betting on blackjack, or you bet on a football game, or, you know, I think you have to be willing to lose it, right? Like, you have to be willing to say, okay, we're moving up to get Dalvin Cook at 41. And there's a lot of payoff here, but I have to be able to stomach pick 41, pick 40, you know, the other picks that they traded, pick 48, and I can't remember exactly the other picks, but essentially, if you trade up to get a guy, like if you're Atlanta and you trade up to get Julio Jones, you basically have to say, well, you know, the downside here is Julio Jones not playing well and having almost no draft picks for the next 2 years, you know? And to me, I don't think that that's necessarily part of the discussion. And so, like, okay, I don't know necessarily, because, you know, I think we're relatively cynical by comparison, but if you think about it in the Vikings terms here, like, okay, they moved up and got Dalvin Cook. Dalvin Cook got hurt. They almost got nothing out of him last year at a volume standpoint, and they were good, you know? And so maybe that was a trade up where the risk reward profile was okay, you know, because there's still a ton of upside. But so far, even if it was the worst, you know, even if the outcomes were the worst across the board, the Vikings are still fine, you know. Whereas I think if the Jets go broke on this trade, it's probably going to ruin a lot of, you know, people's careers, you know. So I think you have to factor that in. And I don't think it's always trading down. I do think that there are opportunities where you have to, you know, especially if you're a team, you know, that is relatively stacked, and you know those, you know, there's only like five spots available on your roster for rookies to even make the team. I think moving up or you know trading for picks in subsequent years is smarter, but I think on average it's probably best to trade back.
Yeah, just to answer your question, Eric, the Dalvin Cook trade was 48, and I don't know the exact number, but it was a fourth rounder, and it was the one we got from the Leonte Carew trade the year prior. So it was a fourth rounder that wasn't even our own natural one.
Yeah, so I mean, like the Vikings are probably thinking, okay, like we're fine with, and you could put some resulting into it as well. Like if you already got, you know, if you traded back, let's say, and got that fourth round pick for the Leonte Carew, you know, and the player that you got, I don't actually think they got a player that year, but like let's say that the you've had previous trades that have worked out, you're sort of working with house's money to kind of make the gambling analogy again. So it's like, I do think that all of that sort of goes into play there. But you know, there, as with anything, there are risks that are not necessarily as bad as other risks. And I think you just have to, you know, think about like whether or not, you know, it's worth the sort of sticking your neck out there, because trading up is very much sticking your neck out there.
And I guess the last question that I had for you guys as it pertains to kind of all these things, because it's not just about the trading up and kind of as you mentioned it right there, you know, trading up is sticking your neck out there and putting yourself kind of at the mercy of the lower end probability kind of range of outcome. One of the things that we've talked about, like we've talked about previously, but something that's been brought back to my mind a little bit as we go through this draft season is as people talk about Josh Allen, because he is one of those players that when you look at him from through the prism of pretty much anything that has to do with any number whatsoever, he does not, I guess maybe unless we're talking about, you know, the radar gun, but like everything else that has a number attached to it, it looks like he's a bust. But there's still that, you know, that potential that's in there that he could hit. And so I'm reading very often now is like, well, if Josh Allen, you know, hits, it'll be like the end of analytics. And so on and so on and so on. You touched on a little bit there, but what is the smarter way, or what is the better way, or what is a way for us to talk about probabilities in a way that makes it more accessible for people to understand? Is when you're saying that, you know, I wouldn't draft Josh Allen, it's not saying that it's impossible for him to hit, but it's saying that it's a small likelihood of him hitting. Or when you say like, or is it one of the things where if he hits, no one cares because he hit, and like we know the lottery is a bad investment, but if I win the lottery, who cares what the math says type of thing?
Right. I mean, it, like, so my friend that works at Prediction Machine, Paul Basir, he was on the radio, I think, a few times talking about like how, you know, when you create for March Madness, you create like sort of a prediction, you know, market bracket kind of thing, and the 16 team beats the one, you know, obviously no one's going to predict that to happen, right? But it's sort of fun to see when it does. So like, I'm not gonna like root against Josh Allen. I'd be really, it'd be really cool if a guy with that kind of cannon was good in the NFL. But at the same time, like, even though it was really cool that a 16 beat a one in the NCAA tournament, like you'd be foolish to rush to bet it. You know what I'm saying? At whatever +200 or plus whatever it was to bet that game, 2000 probably. You know, and I view it the same way with Allen. Like, they're long odds, you know, and but when they hit, they're probably going to be, you know, they're probably going to pay off quite a bit. But I don't think, like, I still think it's a sucker bet, if that makes sense. Whereas I think guys like Mayfield and guys like, you know, guys like Rosen and Darnold and things like that, Lamar Jackson, I think that they're far better odds. And you know, you just have to talk about the capital necessary. You know, you're basically when, you know, when you draft Josh Allen in the top five, you're paying for, you know, I would say, you know, 5-to-1 odds when you know, you really should be, you know, getting value at like 20-to-1 or something like that. So that's all I'm kind of saying with that is that like it's, you know, you have to know how uncertain it is, and then you have to, you know, pay for it accordingly. If Josh Allen's being picked in the fourth round, I think it's great value, right? Third round, great value probably. But, you know, top five pick, the expectation, I mean, you can't go into the NCAA tournament expecting a 16 seed to beat a one.
Makes sense. Makes sense. And how about you, Luke? I guess from your perspective, what's the better way maybe for us to talk about kind of these things when we're talking about your probabilities and range of outcomes to where I guess the conversation doesn't devolve into something that's so, you know, binary.
I think there are some players that are good gambles and some that are bad gambles, right? You could say, oh, okay, every player in the draft is a gamble. Sure, give me that platitude. But like Josh Allen is roulette. And you can win roulette. People win roulette sometimes, but roulette is a pretty bad gamble, right? You can't make a bet on a roulette table that's better than 50%. The best you can do is betting on red or black, and that's a 50-50 shot.
And Wesley Snipes told you what you're supposed to do there.
So, but that doesn't mean you can't win. It just means it's a bad gamble. And I think people need to understand, like, we need to do a better job of making people understand that, like, we're saying this is a bad bet, not that this is an unwinnable bet. And there are some people that are more like poker or like blackjack that's a game you can finesse, a game that you can use your skills and turn it into something where you have a greater than 50% chance of winning. And that's a guy like Rosen or Mayfield, somebody like Saquon Barkley. You're going to almost certainly get what you think you're getting from him. And with Josh Allen specifically, too, I think there's a lot of hubris involved because he's – a guy with all the tools or whatever that platitude is, but he needs to be coached. And every coach in the whole world thinks, I can coach him up. Because if they didn't, they wouldn't be in this league. So there's going to be a lot of hubris. And the idea of he needs to be coached up, I think, you know, we as fans often see players like Jake Locker not get coached up. But coaches don't think that they're going to be the guy that couldn't coach up Jake Locker. They think that they're going to be the guy that could coach up somebody like Aaron Rodgers or, God willing, Pat Mahomes. So I think we need to Eric's showing off his Chiefs gear. So I think we need to do a better job of like describing, you know, when we say, hey, analytics doesn't like Josh Allen, I think people read that as analytics is 100% certain that Josh Allen won't do it. And I think we just need to do a better job of defining like what a good bet and a bad bet means. Is he a blackjack or is he a roulette?
Okay. I love that. I also love the fact that pretty much every single one of the analogies we made about anything that has to do with anything related to numbers is about gambling. We may all have problems that we need to talk to somebody about, but it makes sense.
Jason, I don't think so, honestly, because I don't know if you guys know this, but the entire branch of probability theory in mathematics was developed by people who wanted to figure out if any of those games were winnable.
I did not know that.
There are books that like all the probabilities that actuaries learn, they're from the mathematical discipline that was developed by basically degenerates wanting to know how to beat the And now probability is used to study finance. It's used to study sports. It's used to study biology, gene frequencies, all this kind of stuff. And it all came to, you know, don't ever let people tell you that gambling is a purely, you know, dead end.
That is awesome. Dude, that's a great. See, I'm going to go learn some math right now. Well, all right. Well, gentlemen, I feel like we've covered basically everything I wanted to get to from you guys today. Just before we get out of here, as always, I know, Luke, we talked about what you just wrote, but I guess, is there anything else in the hopper? I know I'm being greedy. Anything else on deck?
Yeah, actually, I'm probably going to try to do a little bit more with like the approximate value stuff. I did something last year with this where I basically like put every team's draft histories of the last like 5 years together and like summed up their like added up their AV acquired in all the previous drafts, adjusted for draft position, and like tried to evaluate them that way. And I want to update that methodology a little bit by looking specifically at like how well they do per draft pick against the expectation of their draft position. So if you pick, you know, 10th overall and you're supposed to get like 25 points of AV out of that, how well the teams do and do that with everybody's picks and see how that works out. And probably do it with an eye toward Rick Spielman as well, because it is a Vikings website.
Awesome. And the hardest working data scientist in all of football Twitter, maybe? Eric?
Well, maybe, or I mean, I would say George is probably is up there as well. But so we have the PFF forecast. Thanks again, Jason. We record that every Tuesday, and it comes out on Wednesday. I'm glad it's up on Stitcher now, so Jason can listen to it while he's mobile.
No, it's not. No, still not on Stitcher. It's on the Podbean app.
Okay,
It's been
Podbean.
added
All
to
right.
the Podbean app, so I can listen to it there.
Goodness gracious. Okay. Well, anyway, so iTunes, Podbean, they're up there. We had a piece today about projecting run defense. We had a piece last week projecting pass rush based on Pro Football Focus grades in college versus pro. We have 3 years of a sample there now. Tomorrow, I have an article out talking about storylines in the AFC West, which, if any of you are also Chiefs fans on the side, the main squeeze is the Vikings, but the Chiefs are sort of the side piece. Go ahead and give that a look. I don't know. I think I'm done with analogies for the night, though.
Well, all right. And I think with that, we're done with the show for the night. So, gentlemen, as always, thank you for coming on, recording with me. This time, I will actually remember to post the episode over the weekend, like I said I would, as opposed to us recording and then me going on the road for work and not posting it until much later. So that is my promise to you, my friends, and to you, the listeners, is that you will obviously be hearing this pretty soon. So with that, thanks for listening. This has been another episode of the Pocket Protectors Podcast. And yeah, y'all have a good one.